Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking computers today with you. If your computer has been hacked, you know how many problems that can cause. Well, what happens when an entire company is attacked? We'll be talking about cyber attacks with our regular guest, Peter Green, today. He's a computer consultant with Infostar.com. Stops by every other month to help you with your computer-related problems. So what would you like to know about cyber attacks? What other tech questions might you have? I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Peter Green, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Always great, Larry.
Cyber attacks. What's involved with a cyber attack?
It's where someone from the outside is trying to break through firewalls, infiltrate phishing, where they send you what looks like a friendly email to trick you into clicking on, you know, a document or an invoice, you know, just trying to break through your security. And it's gotten a lot worse, and some of them have been very serious to the point where our government has been proactive in dishing out sanctions, and it's been in the news. President Obama did it, and Trump re-upped it with some additional sanctions. But some people feel it isn't enough. And, you know, cyber terrorism, cyber vandalism, cyber warfare, you know, they talk
all about different kinds of things, aren't they?
They talk about how to categorize it. And, you know, talking about cyber warfare, they're saying, well, is it really cyber warfare because no one's died? But look at some of the prices that companies have paid with the cyber attacks. This one shipping company in Europe has 80,000 employees. Within a two-hour time period, their entire network was compromised and down. And it was supposedly ransomware, but it wasn't really ransomware because you could have paid whatever you wanted and you wouldn't have gotten anything back. So they were trying to be destructive. And that was NotPetya. There are others, CryptoLocker, WannaCry, where, you know, you pay a price and you can get it back. But that's not always the case. Sometimes they're just doing it to do it, you know, for the sake of doing it, to say that they could. Sometimes they're looking for it for monetary reasons. Sometimes they're looking to just, you know, inflict damage. But whatever it is, it really needs to, personally, it's so distasteful. I can't even say things on the air about how I feel about it. You know, if they put that kind of effort into, you know, fighting world hunger or, you know, curing cancer or some of the diseases we have, instead of, you know, the efforts to, you know, try to get into somebody's computer and take it down, I wish they would, you know, put those kind of efforts, because the large companies are the targets. You know, the Microsoft, the Apple, the Cisco, you know, the list goes on and on. Norton, McAfee, they all have targets on their back. They all, you know, someone wants to take them down.
So what, you mentioned earlier one attack, and I think it was one of the biggest attacks. It was from 2017, wasn't it?
Yep, NotPetya.
And we're not talking about millions of dollars here.
No, we're talking... there's an article on Wired magazine that I was enlightened to by a friend who went through the unfortunate circumstance of having his company infiltrated with ransomware, and it was because a computer was brought in that was unprotected. And the same thing happened with the NotPetya. Attack that took place compromised all the systems with so fast at light speed, you know, they just didn't even know what was going on. And then it infiltrated other companies that were, you know, doing business, were connected doing business. And it just went on and on, you know, where it took out a bank in 45 seconds. It took out hospitals. It took out financial companies. And, you know, unless you have a backup that's protected, your backup's no good. So the damages that are inflicted, FedEx, one of FedEx's branches in Europe got got affected by it. So then the numbers that came in are estimated between $5 and $10 billion. You know, some of the outcomes of being infected and taken down by that ransomware was, you know, they were a large shipper, so they had terminals, you know, in ports,
yeah,
where, you know, the guard at the gate is like, well, okay, truck number one, you go to, you know, gate Z, truck number two, you go to gate B1 or whatever. They didn't know where to tell them to go.
Yeah.
So they had miles and miles of truckers lined up for coming and going, didn't know where to go. So the police were like, you just need to leave.
It's just an amazing, what do companies need to do to prevent this from happening to them?
Well, I've been saying this for probably more than two decades, Larry. If you don't want to get infected, don't be attached to the internet.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. But then we look at the Internet of Things. That's what they call it, the Internet of Things, which is really the devices that are all connected to the internet. Because every device that's connected to the internet is got a port address that, you know, is where they are connected, is in the billions. And, you know, it's going to continue to grow. So the only way to really be 100% safe is to not be connected.
Yeah.
But with that being said, having antivirus protection, you know, like an Android phone, I've talked about this before, an Android phone was born from an open operating system. Therefore, it has security holes. If you have an Android phone and you don't have antivirus protection on it, what more do I have to say? Okay. Google purchased the rights and managed to say, hey, now it's our, and you know, and they're trying to work with it, but it was born as an open operating system. So this Internet of Things is just making sure you're protected. Your data is your data. You're responsible for backing it up, whether you back it up to the cloud or you back it up to some other media, securely back it up. Now, I happen to use, and I put articles online for people to go to in the InfoStar Virus Info Center in the very top. I've got a link up there that says ransomware, and in there I talk about, or have articles that talk about backups and strategies and tell you about NotPetya, tell you about WannaCry and CryptoLocker and the magnitude and what happened with those. And they're still out there because people haven't updated their systems. And if you don't, one of the things with the NotPetya having its such a massive effect was the fact that their operating system hadn't been updated across their network. They were still in Windows 7. And even though Windows 10, you know, every time Microsoft claims the world's most secure operating system in the world, but every month they come out with, you know, holes that they're patching, they were on Windows 7, and it took down their Windows network. Windows 10, we know, is much better than Windows 7. It's not perfect. And again, if you want to be 100% protected, then just don't go on the internet. But make sure your antivirus is up to date. And when you do backups, make sure your backups are secure. There are backups that you can do that protect against ransomware. And then there are just backups you do to copy it to another device. But if that device gets compromised, that backup can get compromised. So
be careful.
Be careful.
Well, we'll give you a chance to join in as you listen to Peter talk here. Questions or comments for him about cyber attacks or about other computer questions, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. Patty in Rice Lake has something for us, so let's go to Patty. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have a question and a comment. As far as all of this virus stuff is concerned, I suggest for backups, don't forget the old-fashioned way. For example, if the Russians are hacking our electronics, why don't we just go back to paper ballots? Okay, so that point out of the way. Recently, my Google, when I open up Google Chrome, there are this pop-up that comes up with news articles or kind of disgusting photos of like cold sore medicines or something, and I can get it off I mean, I can remove it by clicking an arrow, but I don't know if it's malware or if Google is doing that now. And I didn't want to take it and have somebody look at it and pay $80 if it's what Google's doing.
Well, it's actually the websites that you're visiting are somehow triggering pop-ups on your browser. So there's a couple of things you can do. One is you can go into Chrome and look under options or preferences. They all keep changing, but those are the popular words to look for, is options or preferences. And then look for where you can stop pop-ups. So either allow pop-ups or not allow pop-ups. And that should stop that.
It didn't stop. And did it not stop because sometimes I look at news articles on my cell phone. Mm-hmm. I don't look at news articles when I'm on my laptop, but is the fact that I continue to look at some news articles on my cell phone the reason why it continues to come?
It's possible, because if you log in with your phone with a Google account, do you have like Gmail?
Yeah.
It could be a pass-through on that, so that is possible. One thing you might want to do is clear the cookies on your system. You can and clear the history and see if that helps, especially the cookies, because what the cookies are is early on the programmers were like, you know, we need a way to allow two-way communication because the browser is really one way. But what the cookie does is it allows it to be a two-way communication. In other words, let's say I'm interested in buying a Mustang or a Chevy Blazer or a Ford Blazer, Chevy Blazer, whatever. So I'm looking at cars. By using cookies, it deposits them on my system so that when I go and look at car sites, it's putting ads in front of me that they know are going to be more, you know,
in line with
what I want to buy or look at versus, you know, a hybrid. Because I'm looking for a truck or something like that. So if you clear the cookies, you might have good success with stopping the pop-ups.
And then there'll be times when you want to have a cookie,
right.
And
exactly.
Then you just gotta have to go back in.
Yeah. You know, the biggest frustration I hear from people, and this is really has to do with passwords, and it's good to have passwords, and it's I say, you know, make sure you have, a handful of password setups in your stable. So that when you have to retry your passwords, if you don't keep track of them, that you have a pretty good shot at knowing what they are, or have an email send you and remind you. But the thing is, when you clear the cookies, you're typically clearing the login information to your banks, to your favorite vendors that you shop at, you know, and so forth, and to your Gmail account and Yahoo account and things like that.
So you got to add those back in.
So just make sure before you clear those that you know what they are so you can get back in.
Yeah, there you go. Patty, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. Kate Archer Kent, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your computer today, talking a bit about cyber warfare, but other personal computer issues. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Peter Green of Infostar.com. Questions for Pete? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Nancy and Baldwin next. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I would just like to ask your guest, I have a Google Chromebook, and I have been told that I don't have to worry about anybody getting into it because of the way it's built. Is that correct?
When you say the way it's built, that it has built-in protection?
No, that I can get out on the net, but that nobody can get into because it doesn't have the same system that a regular computer does. So this is a Google Chromebook.
Okay.
I know they use it a lot in the school system around here, too.
Yeah, I don't, again, unless it's you're disconnected, there's no 100%, you know, being safe. Apple systems don't typically get viruses, but they're not 100% immune. It's just The attacks come through, a lot of them come through phishing, which is to say, comes from your bank, comes from your insurance company, comes from somebody you know, comes from a company you did business with, says, hey, here's an invoice, click on it, and you're like, oh, I didn't get an invoice, so I wonder what this is about. So then you click on it, and then you find out, it was an invoice to take down your system. So unless you the device that you're using is connected, has protection, you're not completely safe.
Yeah.
And, not to scare you, but yes, to scare you, okay? NotPetya took down a company that employs 80,000 people in 2 hours, an entire network. The systems just went blank.
So
it
always pays to be careful.
So whoever was in charge, okay?
Yeah.
And it was a Windows 7 setup, okay? And so, they learned their lesson in a hard way. But who's to say that Google's system does not get infiltrated by backdoor? Who's to say Apple's, really pristine operating system doesn't get infiltrated by, instead of some, employee being really angry and pulling out a gun and doing the stuff that they've been doing, decides that, everybody that gets the next OS upgrade is going to get hosed.
Yeah.
We don't have those kind of, controls. Only people that are in high places in those companies that are trying to make sure that their assets are protected. But again, if you're not disconnected from the internet, you're never 100% protected.
There you go, Nancy. Thanks a lot. Not the most cheerful information you'll get today, but
just
accurate.
Trying to be
anyway.
Honest, and as Larry, we've been talking about not being, unless you're disconnected, 100% safe. We've been talking about that since the internet really came into the forefront.
Yep, we have. Thanks, Nancy. Appreciate it. Tony and Glidden, it's your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hey, thanks for taking my call today. I have a program on my computer that's a Microsoft program, and it's listed as SVC Host. It's the host operating program. There's a sub program to it called Superfetch. Now, this site apparently tries to guess what you're going to search on the computer. My question is there a way I can turn off this Superfetch program because it's using like 100% of my memory while it's running?
There's probably a reason why it's using 100% memory. There might be something running in the background. If you search on admin controls, you can probably look at turning that off. But
I've gone to like task manager and tried to end task and gone to file location.
Right.
But it gives me just SVC host. It doesn't give me the option for this sub program Superfetch that's running in the SVC host program.
Yeah. I believe the Superfetch is for the operating system that's basically like indexed your system in looking for files. But there's something.
It's being made necessary.
It's being made to run in that high speed, 100% mode because of something else that's prompting it to do that. What have you tried cleaning up your registry at all?
Yeah, I've done everything. I've done disk scans. I've done disk cleanups. I've done everything.
But you actually have tried to eliminate bad registry entries?
I guess not.
Okay. A utility that I've used is called CCleaner, and you can use that to clean up the registry and see if that eliminates that, from running 100% of the time. Some of those things that you see running are running as a function of the operating system, and it's part of it's due to your, if you're connected to the internet, they're going to run in the background. And depending upon what software you're using, some of those things are, initiated to run. So shutting them off may, make your system actually worse, even though it says it's using 100% of your resources. Because when you go to use other programs, they may be, you know, knocking at its door and saying, hey, I need you to do this for me, and yet it won't do it because it's not there. So I would try, you know, eliminating bad registry entries first. I would then also clear up temporary internet files, and maybe switch your web browser to a different one, and, you know, see if your system performs better.
Yeah, there you go.
And keep things up to date. And that's one thing I want to talk a little bit about is keeping, you know, Windows 10 up to date. We've had this tug of war, Larry, in the past year because of some of their updates. What I found helpful is, and I posted this also on the top of the InfoStar Virus Info Center page and also in the top 10 links, is that I found it useful to go to the Microsoft catalog site. And when they push out an update, instead of having my system go and say, hey, I'm going to do an update and it's run in the background, I actually go to the catalog. I've done this. Go to the catalog site, grab the update that I need, download that, and then install it and see if it works. If I have problems with it, then I can uninstall it very quickly. I don't have to go through the pain of finding out, oh, my system was updated the next day. Why are things not working? Oh, yeah, it's another Microsoft update that I got to deal with. So, you know, go to their Microsoft catalog site and, you know, grab the update that you need. And I just found that a lot easier to manage than just letting them push it out to me and sitting there waiting for my system to update and then wondering if it's
actually
going to work or not.
Yeah. There you go, Tony. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lucas in Waukon, Iowa, we'll go to you next. Hi, Lucas.
Good day to the both of you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just got a question about getting internet access. Where we live, we don't have internet access. We're very rural in a very rugged area. And we don't have a hard line for a telephone either, so I guess we're looking at satellite internet. I just wondered, is that the only option? And what does the speaker think about that?
Yeah, pretty much. Let's go through the probably three options that I can think of. Usenet, which I happen to use. You've got a number of different levels. I don't have their latest and greatest, you know, setup, but... So Usenet is the satellite option. Another option would be to see if you do have cell service, if there's a way to set up a hotspot from your cell phone provider, if that's a possible option. And then the only other option, and this one's a little bit tougher to pull off, is if there happens to be like, you know, a business nearby where you might be able to hook up by line of sight to grab their internet and pull it into your location would be the other option. That's how places like airports and campuses spread their internet hotspots around, is by line of sight. They just move the internet around.
Yeah. So those are the options, Lucas. Good luck. Appreciate your call. And Kurt in Brownsville. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi. What can we do for you, Kurt?
Well, I've got a Galaxy smartphone. It's an S5. And I was just wondering if your guest had any recommendations for a good antivirus for the phone. Right now, I just got one out of the Google Play Store, and it's antivirus-free. Mm-hmm. And it goes through the... you know, the routine of, you know, checking everything and shows everything's all right. But I'm just wondering, is that, you know, dependable, or is there something out there that's the newest or the better?
Well, you know, you bring up a good question, a good point. In the Play Store, what's nice about the apps is people rate them. So, you know, if you find an app that's got a good rating, and I'd say something that's usually rated like 4.5 out of 5, with, you know, more than one or two ratings,
yeah.
You know,
sure.
Reviewers, is a great way for feedback to help you. So, you know, if the antivirus free version that you're using, people are happy with, I would say, you know, stick with it and, you know, learn the features of it and make sure, you know, you know what it's doing for you. I use Avast on my phone. There are others out there. And like I said, you know, looking at the reviewers and, you know, what you're comfortable with is a great way to go. It's nice that they, you know, let people review and give feedback, because I've always said when you're shopping for something, read the reviews and see if there's something that they're enlightening you about that you never even thought of, you know, with whatever you buy or whatever you use.
I found that a lot of times I thought, oh, I never would have thought of that.
Right.
I see one of the reviews and it makes you think a little bit. Mm-hmm. Kurt, thank you. Appreciate your call. Ron in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I have a Windows 10 laptop. I also have a Mac Mini. But I was just wondering, I keep getting these pop-up windows supposedly from Norton asking me to, I tried it for 30 days of free trial and, you know, fine. Of course, it automatically disabled Windows Defender. But I suppose I should probably be kind of leery about clicking on these pop-up windows. It could be a counterfeit, couldn't it?
So you didn't renew or buy into it after 30 days? Did you did you uninstall Norton?
Well, no, I did not. I should. Huh?
Yeah, see, if you didn't uninstall it, they're going to say, hey, you know, we're still here. We're willing to help you out, but, you know, you haven't paid us, so... You know,
how do you get to that uninstall? I do it once in a while. I'm going all over, navigating all over that laptop, but there's a certain protocol step. You got to go to settings, right? And then from there, where do you go?
I think you go into programs or apps, and that's, you know, there's usually a list. I use CCleaner Utility. There's Glare Utilities. There are other utilities out there that do it in a more intuitive way, you know, give you just a little bit better way to uninstall applications and also clean your registry. For some reason, Windows decided not to make all those things really elegant and simple for you, even though they put them on their computers.
So you can put download CCleaner.
It's Piriforms is the company. Uh-huh. So CCleaner will clear your temporary internet files. It'll clear cookies. It'll clear, all the popular programs that you use. There's a free version. There's a paid version. I've never paid for it. I've always found that the free version has been adequate for what I do. And cleaning the registry, especially if you install or uninstall a lot of applications, the registry tends to get a little haggard. And what it means is that it once was there, and the operating system is like, I knew you once. Yeah, so every now and then, I'll say hello to you again, but you're not answering me. So, you know, it starts getting preoccupied with all these little tasks that it thinks it needs to do, but it doesn't. And that's what tends to slow computers down. That's in layman's terms.
There you go, Ron. Thank you so much for calling. And you can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Vicki in Green Lake, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Just a fast question. I had installed antivirus on my cell phone, but then when I went into the Verizon store for an issue I had on my Samsung, they were looking at what I had on my phone, and he says, you don't need any extra virus because these phones have it on it already. So I know I heard you earlier saying to install one, but the Verizon store was telling me not to, and they actually took it off.
Did you talk to every single person in that Verizon store?
No.
Okay.
Is there a built-in app already on the phone?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Nope. There are things that people have been brought up to, you know,
believe.
Okay, thank you, Larry. They've been brought up to believe that it really isn't that way. And, you know, I'm not saying that the training at these stores is good or bad, but, the total number of devices, and again, let's call it the Internet of Things. That's the label it's been given. Right now, it's probably hovering at about 10 billion devices hooked up. And it's in just a couple of years, it's going to be between 20 and 22 billion devices, which includes these smartphones. And we've talked about it on the show before, where the people that want to make money for free, make money out of nothing, like Bitcoin and stuff like that, they cryptojack your phone, and it starts to overheat because they've hijacked it to start using it for them. But you don't know that that's going on because they're not telling you that. They're just doing it. And, you know, it's going to get in on your phone if it's unprotected and you happen to get tagged by going to a site that says, hey, you know, I want to include your phone in on my, you know, search for the almighty Bitcoin. So I'm just saying that I don't know the training at all these stores, but to say that you're protected, you know, where is the protection on your phone? Ask them, where is the protection on your phone? I want to see it. I want to know what it does for me.
How do you spell that one that you said you used on Android?
AVAST. They actually
just use the free version?
Yeah, I just use free version. There's another company, AVG. We've talked about them before. AVAST purchased AVG.
Oh. Okay.
And they're on, I don't even know how many downloads they have, but you know, it's pretty large, and you know, they might have a target on their back, but I think Norton McAfee is probably a little bit bigger than them. There are others out there. You know, I'm not saying it's the best. It's one I happen to use. There's so many options with these antivirus programs that, you know, to crawl under the hood and optimize the settings and things like that, which is stuff that I do. It makes it a little bit easier when you focus on one versus me downloading 10 of them saying, hey, yeah, I like this one. This one looks cool and so forth. Now on the PC, I use Avast Internet Security, which happens to be not the free version. And it's a little bit more robust. It's, and I've actually communicated with them because I said, hey, you guys have a conflict with a Windows update, and I had to uninstall it across my entire network, and I said, that was not fun. And they said, oh, we got that figured out. So I'm giving them another chance, is the way I look at it. But don't do it to me again. I said, make sure your communication with Microsoft is good, because it's not fun when you have to uninstall it across an entire network.
Vicki, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. And Susan in Madison, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Sure.
Yeah. If I want to go to a secure Wi-Fi and my home Wi-Fi, I have concerns about it. What do I have to do? Go to a computer shop and use theirs? Is there any public Wi-Fi that's secure?
So you're talking about using secure Wi-Fi in your home?
Yeah, like, for instance, just things like I just want to back up a phone and such. Do you think that's okay to do at, like, an Apple store? Or should it be a more secure Wi-Fi instead of the public Wi-Fi and such?
Well, you know, having a secure Wi-Fi is basically, you know, the encryption when you log in, and actually having a login. So if you've got a Wi-Fi at home that has that secure login, then your connection is secure. Okay? If you're, you know, out and about in a Wi-Fi where you didn't have to log in, but you have access to it, that's not a secure connection. And there's a term that is given to that, and it's called war driving, where people drive around in neighborhoods with a laptop or a smart device, a tablet or whatever, and they look and see if they can log into somebody's or tap into somebody's Wi-Fi. That's the term they've given is called war driving. So if you have a Wi-Fi that's open or exposed like that, then it's not secure. But if you log in with a password, then it is secure and it's okay to use.
So you can use it at home.
Yep.
Do you recommend people turn off their Wi-Fi if they're not using it?
No, as long as it's secure, there's no reason for you to turn it off. I mean, Wi-Fis for homes are typically not hacked into. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, but if you leave it unsecure, you're more likely to have it hacked.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Susan. Appreciate the call. And Sarah and Nina, your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. What's on your mind?
So I have an 8-year-old iMac, and it's running really, really slowly. So I was curious if your guests would recommend whether I repair or replace it. And if I do replace it, I'm curious how I go about saving and being able to access all the photos I have on it.
Okay. So you said it was about 8 years old.
Right.
Yeah. So it's being the operating system upgrade for that is sunsetted by Apple. In other words, they're not allowing you to move forward to upgrade your operating system. The window for them, I think, is like 5 or 6 years. So you might have, I don't know the hard drive space on your system, but maybe you talk about photos. If you're using it a lot for photography and storing digital photos and accessing all of them, you might have an issue where you're getting cramped on, free hard drive space. And all computers use what's called swap space, where it's kind of like a chalkboard and they write to it. So if your system has, let's say, 8 gigs of RAM, that chalkboard space on the computer's hard drive might be like 16 gigs of RAM. So it's being used by the operating system just to function properly. So if you start bumping up against those kind of limits, that's where things start to slow down. So you could try to, take a look at what you have for hard drive space and see if that might be an issue and free up some space. In terms of moving your files, you could just get, a large thumb drive or an external hard drive and hook it up to your USB port and copy the files that way. And I would hope that you're using something for Time Machine to do your backups, because that's another, form of backing up Apple systems is Time Machine. And I use that on a regular basis, and it's great because it tells you the date and time of the backup, and you can drill down to it, and you could see every single file that's backed up on your system. You can pick ones that you want backed up, and you can eliminate, exclude ones that you don't want backed up.
Mm-hmm.
There. And then so I have an iMac that's a couple years old. I think they work great. If you still want to stay that way, you'll be pleasantly surprised with especially with the screen. The Retina screen, the displays are
so
phenomenal.
So nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just even looking at the screensavers are fun.
Sarah, I hope that helps. Does that help you?
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yep.
All right.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Pleased to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking today with Peter Green of Infostar.com about your computer. Great to have him with us. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to the phones, I want to thank you, everyone who contributed during this fall membership drive. You donated more than $600,000. More than 3,300 listeners pledged, including more than 700 new members. And we really appreciate it. And I personally do. Your gift ensures Wisconsin has a vital, strong public radio service right down the road. So thank you very much. And with that, we'll go right back to the phones and take another call. Jim in South Milwaukee's been waiting a bit. Jim, thanks for waiting.
Well, thank you for picking up my call. The question I have, I will do a lot of searches for various data, and I will bookmark the information. It's Google Chrome, but I also use DuckDuckGo as a search engine. Anyway, all of a sudden, a few days ago, I ran into a problem where I will click on something that I have bookmarked, and it might take 5 or more minutes for that item to come up. Now, I've got at least 3 other identities on my PC where I do not have that problem. But the primary one that I use, all of a sudden, you know, I just can't get this stuff to open up. And I'm wondering if he has any thoughts on that.
So you said you have different identities on the system, and 3 out of the 4 work just fine.
Yes, exactly.
The only way to try to troubleshoot something like that is to just, you know, clean the slate. So if it's having to do with internet searches, I would take the identity that's having the problem and then just clear the history, clear the temporary internet files and see if that cures the problem. You have to realize that when you visit a website, everything on that website's page. So if you click on the home page and then the next page and the next page, everything that you see in your web browser is actually what they call cached, but it's written to your hard drive in a temporary location. To every single word, image, the entire contents of that page is on your system, and that's how those things continue to build. If for whatever reason you get a glitch or a hiccup or a burp on a page and it has problems for whatever reason, it just kind of, it has a domino effect and it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So the files start getting fragmented on the hard drive and they start to take up more and more disk space. And then before you know it, the operating system is having a conflict. When you're using the one identity versus the other three, the other ones are basically out of the picture, and the one that you're using is in control. So if there's anything that's hiccuped or had a problem with that, that's where you have to start with.
So how does he do that?
You can do it in the individual browsers, or you could use a utility like the CCleaner. And if you, you know, take the time to learn about or search on, you know, other, you know, utility programs that work on different devices, you'll look at the settings and you'll see that it, you know, it's got Firefox, Mozilla Firefox in there. It's got Chrome. It's got Edge. It's got Explorer. You know, it's Safari. So it'll list all those different browsers that you're using, and it'll tell you what it's doing with them. You know, what files it's removing and so forth.
Okay.
And if you're using Office, you know, Microsoft Office programs create temporary files. So it'll tell you, hey, I'm going to, you know, clear out your, you know, fragmented or old files that, you know, aren't being used and things like that.
So there you go, Jim. That's really good advice, I think. And I think it'll help immeasurably.
Mm-hmm. I'll certainly give it a try.
All right. Thank you
so much.
And Stephen in Wausau, we'll go to you now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my question. I had kind of a two-part question. First off, what is, you know, I've been hearing a lot about cryptocurrency and how it's being used, you know, in ransomware and things like that. And I'm just wondering how the influx of cryptocurrency has affected the cyberspace. Mm-hmm. And then just another side question, if someone does get infected by like a crypto locker type of program, is the current thinking in the industry to like pay that? Is there a success rate if people pay those ransoms?
Well, I'll answer the last one first. A friend of mine that had his problem here locally contacted the FBI and they said pay it. And they did pay it, and they were able to get back some of their data that, you know, that was compromised. That's not always the case. The NotPetya one that looked like ransomware in 2017, you could have paid until you were blue in the face. Didn't matter. It was to be destructive and not you know, looking for money. So, you know, it's every case is individual in terms of, you know, whether or not the person can afford to pay what the people that are asking for money, you know, how much are they asking? Sometimes they're not asking a lot, but depends on what you think is a lot or a little. $5 could be a lot to somebody. $300 could be a lot to somebody. So, but like I said, my friend lucked out. He paid. He was able to get something back. In terms of the cryptocurrency, you know, the Bitcoins, the all of them out there is, you know, it's just another way of putting a value on something. And it's created this mentality of digital or cyber mining. And unfortunately, the people that want to cyber mine for these cryptic currencies or cyber currencies are have to, you know, get more and more computer power to mine the currency. And the way they do that is to hijack more and more computers to, you know, to work for them. So, you know, if you find a phone or a computer that seems like it's overheating or hot to touch, yeah, it could be an equipment malfunction, but it could also be hijacked and being utilized. So I would definitely shut it off. And if it didn't have protection on it, I would put protection on it.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Stephen, for calling. Jim and Stevens Point, hi.
Larry, hi. I think Jill might have solved my problem, but let me ask the question anyway. I have both an iPhone and an iPad, and I use it, my iPad, primarily to read my Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Wisconsin State Journal subscriptions. And on my iPad, it's extremely slow to read, to come up, versus my iPhone, which is very easy to read. So I was curious as to why, and Jill suggested maybe it's because I don't use the app and I just use the online version.
That's a good point. What vintage is your iPad?
The iPad is 2 years old. So
okay.
What vintage it is.
All right. So one thing they say to do is to make sure that your phone is up to date with the latest iOS.
Yep.
After you do that, to reboot the phone. You may also want to look in the settings. You can clear the browser, the history on that, you know, for what you're using. So it's probably, you know, Safari on your iPad. So you might want to consider, you know, cleaning that, you know, maybe once a week or once every couple of weeks, and it'll probably be a lot faster.
But the app really...
But the app would... Yeah,
the app is fast.
Yep.
The apps are
if you've
fast.
If you've got an app versus using the browser and then going to the homepage...
Use the app.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, and thanks, Jill.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Good on you, Jill. You know, Thank you.
It'd be sort of like, you know, if you're trying to do online banking from your phone, you could go to the homepage through the browser on your phone, but if they have an app... It's optimized for your phone and, you know...
Much faster.
The bypasses, it just makes it super fast.
Vicki in Mount Horeb, hi, have you got something for us?
Hello, yes, I do. We have a MacBook Pro. It's not quite a year old, and I have a Samsung Galaxy S9 phone. And I have lots of pictures on my phone that I am unable to get to my MacBook Pro into Photos so that I can manipulate them and put them in the albums and such that I want. I've been on the phone for hours with people, so this may be, you know, something bigger than what we can do, but I'm getting so frustrated. I use the USB cord that came with the phone, and I get this pop-up screen on the phone that says to allow, you know, the computer to access it. I click Allow. And the phone is recognized, but it says there are no photos, and there are over 1,000 photos in there. Hmm. And we cannot figure out, I mean, I've been on the phone with Apple, I've been on the phone with Samsung, and nobody seems to be able to figure out why it's doing this.
One thing you might want to try, there are apps that will allow you to interface your Samsung phone with your computer, whether it's a Windows PC or an Apple, and try downloading one of those onto the Apple computer and see how it interfaces. For example, on my web top 10 last week, the number 10 link was for a program that I used to talk to my Samsung Galaxy S8 to my Windows machine, but I know it would also work with the Apple as well.
So that's something really that might be helpful.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of the company. We can look at it after we take a break.
Yeah, after we take a look at the news, we'll get back. So stay listening, Vicki. Appreciate your call. Peter Green, our guest today, computer consultant with Infostar.com, and he comes by every couple of months to talk with you and with me about computer issues. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234. And we'll take some emails, too, after our news break. Email us at ideas@WPR.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with Peter. So you stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com. Great to have him back. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@WPR.org. And Pete, just as we were breaking for news, we had a caller who was having problems with her photos and getting them transferred from from her machine to her phone.
Yeah, to a Galaxy S9 to an Apple.
Yeah, and how can she do that?
I'm not quite sure why it wasn't recognizing the phone, because usually when you hook up a device to the computer, it asks you, one, do you want to trust it? What would you like to do with it?
Yeah.
Import photos, videos, all that stuff. But I've used a program from a company called Syncios, SYNCIOS.com, with good luck in terms of finding virtually any file on my Galaxy S8 phone. And they say it's specifically for, you know, hooking up to Windows and Apple and just looking at files on your phone and grabbing whatever you need.
So Syncios, S-Y-N-C-I-O-S.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, you always have a top 10 list for us every time you're on of places to go. And what have you got for us today?
I won't disappoint again. First, I want to say, you know, good luck to the Brewers today. You know, we're Wisconsin fans here.
They're playing
that's
just
awesome.
About now.
that's if you followed them. If you haven't followed them, it would be great if you do, because it's just awesome that they were able to come back and make a playoff game for the divisional title. That's just amazing.
And you've got a sports-related...
Yeah, I do. Sports-reference.com has any statistics that you can think of related to sports and includes college and pro... football, basketball, baseball, ice hockey. So that's number one. They're all at Infostar.com. Either click on the current top 10 or the top 10 archives. Number two is Fansided.com, and you can build your own custom daily newsletter with updates on your favorite team. And there's a collection of over 300 related communities for sports fans. Number three is Looper, LOOPER.com. That's an entertainment news resource. Number four claims to have 20 years of focus on expert-created education content, and it's called ThoughtCo.com. Number five is Honey.com, which is the official National Honey Board website. And I think, you know, if people don't really realize the value of bees, and I think recently it's come to light that there is a pesticide or herbicide that's been used that might actually interfere with some enzyme production. That might be the downfall of what's going on with the bees. But anyhow, we take a lot for granted, and that's a great resource. And then there's one that just happens to be called joinhoney.com that might be able to save you some money. I haven't tried it, but they say they've got 4,500 plus online stores, and I give you links to some others to check out. And I'm a hockey fanatic. Larry, what would it be? Hockey starts this week, the NHL opening games. This is hockey.org from the NHL, and they make a declaration. All, where does it say here? Simply put, hockey is for everyone. Do I need to say more? They're going to give me a lot of bunk when I go back at work. Number eight is annualcreditreport.com. And I put up all the resources related to getting a free credit report, as well as all the different credit bureaus that are out there. And what is a FICO score? What is that? Mm-hmm. That's all explained there. Number nine, I didn't know this, Larry. Did you have a guest on that ever talked about this website, 511wi.gov?
I have not.
Really?
I don't believe we've ever had anybody.
Do you have anyone from the Department of Transportation ever come on?
We have, yes, had, but I don't think that came up the last time we had that.
This gives you traffic and route information, like, you know, when we had weather events and the flooding and all that stuff. All that stuff is on this site. This is
511wi.gov.
Yeah, if you're planning a trip in Wisconsin, that's a great resource. And if you're planning a trip outside of the state, you know, traveling outside the state and then you start going to places that charge tolls.
Yes.
Well, you need the tollguru.com. Because if you're planning a trip to like Pennsylvania or New York, going through other states, you're going to hit tolls.
Well, lots of them.
This tells you what they are. It's awesome. I haven't used it yet. I plan on using it. Yeah. I do. But I never knew there was a thing that would calculate and tell me the cost of the tolls when I, you know, went on a road trip. That's great.
Yeah.
So they're all there. Oh, and the Microsoft security portal and the update catalog site that I mentioned earlier,
those are
links up there too.
So there you have it. Just go to infostar.com, upper left on the page.
Current. Or the archive and scroll to today's date.
With that, we move to Jim in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, Jim.
How are you?
Good.
I've got, I just bought, about a month ago, about a used PC with, I think it's a 2010 Nobilis. I never heard of that, but that's the only name I could get off it. And it's got Core 2, Intel Core 2 on it. Anyway, when I got it home, I opened it up and the wires were unbundled and they were all over the place. I moved them to the side a little bit and two little wires popped out with two connectors that just were slip in, slip out. They happened to slip out. So I guessed that, put them in and tried it. It didn't work. I changed them around, said it didn't work. Went back to the computer doctor. He said, well, you burned it out probably. I said, oh my goodness. And he downloaded Operating System 7 on it too before I brought it home. 250 gig hard drive, but it's got the newer, not the 50 pin connector, but the smaller one. And I was wondering if there's an adapter for that so I possibly could use that 250 gig in a 50 pin hard drive setup in another PC.
I've actually recently purchased those on eBay. So you can look for those. I've actually purchased ones that go back to like in the 2.5 inch old IDE hard drives for a laptop. So there are a lot of adapters out there. You can look online. You know, I don't know if you have like a local Staples or Office Depot, Best Buy. Some of those places might have them. They get kind of pricey. Places like Newegg, eBay, they have those. You just have to wait, you know, delivery time. They usually have them readily available, and they might cost you between $4 to $10, including, you know, postage and handling.
Yeah. So there you go. Good luck, Jim. Thank you for calling. Julie in Thiensville, on to you. Hi, Julie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a Toshiba satellite that I've used basically hardwired with an AT&T modem. So I don't use it as a lap, a Wi-Fi. But that lower icon, in the lower right-hand corner, you have an icon that brings it up. Currently connected to network internet access, mm-hmm. and it lists all like anywhere from 12 to 20 at any depending on the time I check it. Mm-hmm. And apparently, these are what people that are available to access my system. They are currently accessing my system. And is there any way I can knock them off of this?
Okay. Well, what's going on is you're seeing other potential Wi-Fi hotspots that you could connect to. They're not connected to you. You could connect to them, but probably, I'm going to guess that 9 out of 10 at least are secure, and unless you know the password, you would not be able to connect to them. So they're not trying to connect to you. It's just that your computer's recognizing their signals, and you're within range of them. And they're probably showing you different levels of connectivity, like strong, and one might say weak, another one might say very weak.
Yeah, so there you go.
A couple of them, though, way at the bottom, they show that they're not secure. So actually, if I knew how to do it, I could secure them, get into their system?
If you clicked on it, you could.
Yep. Interesting. Okay, thank you very much.
But at the same time, I caution you, okay, when you do connect to something that is not secure, that you could be susceptible to having, you know, problems as related to that connection.
So don't do that, Julie.
I hope that helps. So it's really you're in range of other Wi-Fis.
Thanks, Julie. On to Jan in Waukesha. Hi, Jan.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I'm calling about the woman who called before the last break that she had a Samsung phone, mm-hmm. Android, and was having trouble getting her photos over onto her MacBook Pro.
Yep.
And I have had that same problem for a very long time, and I actually just went out and bought a SanDisk Ultra dual USB drive where I could put it into the phone and get all of my pictures onto it, and then put it into the computer and download them all onto the computer.
Yeah, that's a great option.
It did not work at all. The computer wouldn't recognize them. So what I finally did, actually it was from an idea from my 11-year-old great-granddaughter. On my phone, I have my photo gallery, but I also have Google Photos. So I installed the app for Google Photos onto my Apple MacBook Pro, mm-hmm. and all the pictures came over. I can look at them all through Google Photos.
Good for you.
Yep.
Good
you know,
for
sometimes
your
I
great...
I take things for granted. I totally space that out. That's another great option. Yep.
Perfect.
And that's why, you know, having a Google Gmail account gives you access to all of these, you know, extras, and they're all free.
Yeah, that's right.
And they work great.
Thank you, Jan. Appreciate it. And Gary in Green Bay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I bought a Mac Mini about 7 years ago, and it's got 4 gig of memory. I've got 2.5 still of free space. I switched to Sierra a while back. And when I bring up just something simple in the morning, like one email program, nothing else is running that I know of, I get this spinning beach ball constantly, and it just takes up time. And I've looked at different solutions on the Internet, and they use words I've never heard of before, so I don't know what to do with it. I wished I hadn't switched to Sierra, but I did.
Hmm. Okay.
So you said it's a Mac Mini, right?
Yep.
You have 4 gigs of RAM?
Yep.
How old is the Mac Mini?
About 7 years.
7 years. I don't know if you're able to upgrade to more memory.
But memory's a problem then, huh?
Yeah, it might be. You know, you're probably at the, you know, in terms of the life of the operating system as well. And I know my Mac Pro, which, you know, when it reached that age, it started, you know, slowing down, and none of the updates, you know, you just can't get them.
Yeah.
So.
Really? I thought these things never slowed down.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they do. So.
And there's one more thing. When you take a picture and put it on the big center field, then you swipe it into one of the folders, if you want to clean up the center field by deleting those pictures, it deletes them out of the folder, too.
Hmm.
You left nothing. Microsoft wasn't that way at all.
Yeah, that might be, you know, a bug that they, you know, the next update would take care of, but I don't think you can get that. I don't know. I'm just speculating because that's not a normal, you know, function.
No. Huh. So there may be a new computer in store for you.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if you could update your system, you might be able to fix some of those things. But unfortunately, you know, when you get set 5-7 years out, the manufacturer doesn't want to do that anymore.
They want you to buy a new one.
Yep.
Spend more money.
Yep.
Oh, there you go, Gary. Thank you. Mike in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Okay, I had two things. One was the lady who called up about the older Mac and her photo problem.
Yep.
If she was using iPhoto, the newer program is Photos, and sometimes there's like a problem between the two transferring. So I would suggest definitely backing up to USB.
Okay.
And my problem is I have a 2014 MacBook Pro with OS 10.9.5. I also have Photoshop Premiere and Premiere Elements from Adobe.
Okay.
About 10 days ago, I did a Safari Flash update, an update for Flash through Safari. You know, for browsing on the web, they tell you your browser's update needs updating, your Flash needs updating, and this and that.
Right.
Ever since that happened, it's like really super slow. It's basically unusable. And what is happening is that Adobe has this startup thing called Auto Analyzer, and that runs even if the Adobe programs are not open. So basically I have to go to the activity monitor and shut it down through there, and then my program is working fine. Then the computer is working fine. And when the so basically, if you're looking at the activity monitor, Auto Analyzer is not responding. It's highlighted in red. And then there's also another thing that pops up, which is the Adobe Demon. Spelled A-E.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds to me that, you know, if the Mac is updated, and you keep your software updated, then you should be contacting Adobe and or Apple and, you know, asking them if there's a fix based on what you've observed. But if they're not all updated, then you might want to look at updating the software. I know I subscribe to Adobe's Creative Suite, which is cloud-based, so they just push out updates whenever they're available. And if you have a problem, then you need to contact them. I would have to contact them and say, hey, you know, what's going on? And that's how software, you know, gets fixed and improves and gets better, is through feedback.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. John in Madison, hello.
Hi, guys. I have a couple questions for you. I was wondering if I can update an iPad version 3 to iOS 10 right now. It's 9.3.
If it allows you to, you should be able to. You have to go into the iPad, you know, and settings, and then see if it'll allow you to do the update. I know I have a 2 and I can't go to 10, but you may be able to. The only way you'll find out is if you actually do it, and you'll I'm pretty sure you have to hardwire your iPad to your phone, or not your phone, your computer, whether it's an Apple or a Windows computer, you know, to pull that off. And make sure it's backed up, too.
Yeah. Darn sure of that.
Yep.
There you go. Yeah. Pat in Madison emailed to say she will be moving soon and then we'll have to switch to a different provider for email. She guesses that means she will have to change her one and only email address she has had for many a year. Mm-hmm. She uses Apple products, considering starting to use an iCloud address for personal email and Yahoo to communicate with vendors. Mm-hmm. Is that a good idea? Any other suggestions otherwise?
Yeah, that should work fine. And like we talked about, you know, a Google Gmail account has a lot of features too, as well.
I don't see why it wouldn't work.
No, it should be fine.
You
know, when you change an email account or address, if you contact the vendor, the ISP, you know, sometimes they'll give you, grandfather you in a little bit extra time. I'm just saying, you know, yeah. I've done this before. And then you can have your email forwarded from that address. So in case you're worried about missing something from somebody, you know, they'll forward that email to
you. But you're going to have to change.
Yeah, eventually you will.
Unfortunately. Dale in Platteville called to say he also had a problem transferring photos from phone to computer. He saved the photos to the hard drive mm-hmm. on the phone and then went from there.
So he directly connected the phone to like a USB device.
Yeah.
Which is what's... I think the interface might be getting some people in terms of how the computers talk to the different devices. And that's why having like a utility program might actually help people, you know, grab what they need.
Get around that. Yeah, for sure. We had a bunch of people calling in with different ways that they solved the problem.
Yeah.
And I think probably it depends, you know, on what you've got.
Yeah. And that Google Drive account, I use it all that, you know, the way for photos and files and sharing stuff with people. It works great.
Yeah, so no problem.
You know,
you got
baby photos, wedding photos, you create a folder with it, you link it, and you send it off to whoever you want and email, and boom, they've got access to those pictures.
Well, Pete, it's always a pleasure to have you come by. You'll be back on December 3rd.
Yep.
Is your next time here. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Peter Green, a computer consultant with Infostar.com. His website is Infostar.com. So, and he'll be back on December 3rd. And again, he went through that top 10 list of his picks for the month. And he actually has 12 up there. And his top 10 is now 12, at least for this month. So you can go there and look up those links. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow at 11, our regular guest Bassam Shakashiri will be back to talk about the world of science. That's at 11. Then at 11:45, we'll be talking to the author of a great new book. It's called 11 Miles to Oshkosh. I really enjoyed it. So I hope you can join us for all that. And thanks again for listening. And please stay with us. You know what? There's lots more to come here this afternoon on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.